completen en línea una forma de derecho de entrada. Esta forma está disponible en Eliminación de Escombros, El Condado de Los Ángeles se recupera, y la fecha límite para llenarla es el lunes 31 de marzo del 2025.
This message is brought to you by Radio Bilingüe Public Radio.
Hi, this is Gloria Steinem, and you're listening to 90.7 FM KPFK Los Angeles, 112,000 watts of progressive free speech radio.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH, this is The Car Show, broadcasting this week and every week here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week by the greatest co-host in the world, a practicing attorney, our Orange County Bureau Chief, Motor Press Guild member, and an owner of two Mazdas, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Now, hey, Mark. Good to be here again with you to talk about cars.
And we are lucky to have another co-host and a semi-regular guest here today, a guy whose resume would take up the whole hour. But I seem to recall he was the founding editor of Super Street, a former editor at CarCraft back in the old Peterson days. Who remembers those? Maybe he was at Edmunds. He'll straighten me out on this. I know he was at KBB, Kelley Blue Book. And now he's executive analyst at iccars.com. Welcome, Carl Brower.
Yay, boy, I feel like we need some kind of music or something to play after that intro, but thank you, Mr. Vaughn.
You need at least a band, maybe theme music to go with you. I don't know what it would be.
Well, we'll let your readers vote on what the theme music is, although now I'm scared to think about it, but yes.
AC/DC, something AC/DC.
I can't drive 55, that's a favorite.
Oh, yeah.
That would work. I'd like that, actually. I'd embrace that for sure.
There's a cool video of Robbie Gordon driving through Baja, like shot from a helicopter, with that as the soundtrack. It's worth Googling. It's lots of fun.
It sounds fun.
Through the air a lot. Okay, speaking of off-road, right now, as we speak, the Mint 400 is going on outside of Las Vegas, Nevada. You can check it out on speedsport1.com. You can also check it out on their website, which is a mint400.com, and it's a really neat race. Did anybody read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
No, I should, but I have not.
You should read it. It's great. It's what all journalists would like to be able to write, but they don't. They say, you know, think the design is controversial instead of saying, you know, what they really think. So you can check. Anyway, that was when Hunter S. Thompson was assigned by Sports Illustrated to go out there and cover the Mint 400, and it turned into, of course, a debacle. I'm not saying the race itself is anymore a debacle. It is a pretty fantastic race going on, like I say, right now, and you can expect the first motorcycle across the finish line in about an hour and a half, 2:30 estimated, the first unlimited finisher, the first four-wheel unlimited finisher, cross line probably at 5:30. You can watch at themint400.com/live and speedsport1.com. That's lots of fun. Closer to home, I've always wanted to go to this one. I've never been yet. Tomorrow, Wings and Wheels at Cable Airport, 1749 West 13th Street in Upland from 8 to 10 a.m. That is held at an airport, so you can look at airplanes and cars, and it'll be a sunny day, just beautiful, wonderful sunny day. And closer to LA, downtown LA, Michelle is going to take us into the world of high fashion or low fashion, because it's lowrider fashion.
For sure. When it's other people go high, you go low with your fashion. At the Peterson, of course, hosting a lowrider fashion show because they want to tie in cars and fashion. And I think low riders is a great way to do that. So today, 6 o'clock, 9 to 9 o'clock, you can still get down there at the
corner. That's in the evening, of course.
Yes, at the corner of Fairfax and Wilshire, where El Pete is located.
El Pete. We got to start getting people to call it that, El Pete. I think that would be so cool. Sorry to interrupt. Please.
Yeah, no worries. So it's going to be a fashion show. And I think you'd see guys in zoot suits and all the girls in the pinup fashions, a la Hot Rod Holly, our friend from San Diego. Okay. So here's the thing. You get admission to the show. You get light snacks and drinks, one beverage in the lobby, and two additional beverages up on their fourth floor exhibit. And if you want to take your kids, you can. It's youth admission is $25. If you have a membership, your youth admission is $22.50. And then adults, it's $40 for non-members and $36 for members. And just go to either show up to buy your tickets or go to peterson.org. And it's E, all E's for Peterson.
Like Pete Peterson.
Correct.
Yes, indeed. All right.
And if and, you're not,
if you don't want to do that, but you still want to do something tonight, what else, Michelle?
Yeah, well, you can go racing. You can go watch the races because if you might remember, one of the dirt tracks up in Kern County has closed, but they consolidated everything into one location at Kevin Harvick's Kern County Raceway in Bakersfield. Tonight is the season opener. They have redone their track, so they are saying on their promo stuff, all new 1/3 mile dirt track for the new era in Bakersfield starts tonight. So they're going to have the IMSA modifieds and sport mods, stock cars, hobby stocks, and American stocks.
Now, when you say IMSA, it's IMCA, not IMSA, like the sports cars. This is a circle track racing on a third mile dirt track. So let's
Don't be confused that it's like, you know, the warm up for the Long Beach Grand Prix or something. It's not like that. It's you know, it's dirt racing. So up in Bakersfield at Enos Lane and I-5, the actual street address is 13500 Raceway Boulevard in Bakersfield. And don't go to the old track at North Chester Avenue.
All right.
Did you know that they were there 79 years, Mark and
That's
Carl?
Incredible. That's incredible. That's longer than, remember, a couple of weeks ago, we read off a list of cars, of tracks that closed in the last year. And I think 79, none of them were there 79. I think a couple of them were in their 70s when they closed. But yeah, that's it's unfortunate. The world is changing.
Yep.
We can't waste space on tracks and cars. Come on, guys. There's got to be better ways to use that space. I'm thinking condos, but that's just
stucco tract homes. That's what the world needs. That's what California needs. More of them.
Sure.
I always go around Southern California and think, you know, if we could just get more people in here, it'd be perfect. So thankfully there's developers out there who are solving this problem.
Sarcasm.
A developer is someone who wants to build a house in the wilderness, and a conservative, not conservative, an environmentalist is someone who already has a home in the house in the wood. All right.
In the meantime, support your local racetrack. The gates open there at Kern County Raceway at 1 o'clock. Grandstands open at 4, and then racing gets underway at 6.
It's so easy to get off topic here. Sorry.
Trying to herd you cats back into.
Meow. All right. March 15th, Saturday. That is next Saturday, a week from today, the Mike Malamute Auto Museum. As we said last week, it is a private facility that you can't get into. You can't just show up and go into it like the Peterson. It is a private facility. So when it is open to the public is a rare and wonderful thing. And it is going to be open March 15th and also March 29th. Now, on the 15th, they have an event there, an open house from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and night at the car museum. Oh, that's already happened. Never mind. And there's going to be a bring a trailer event there on March 29th. So this is really cool. It's called, the website is called Malamute Auto Museum Foundation.org. That is a big bite to chew off. There's not a lot of information there. There's not a lot of information on their Facebook page. So I actually called up Mike, and he was at the time, I called him up like a week ago, and he was at Moda Miami, and he said, yeah, those dates are right. So a very friendly guy and always happy to talk to you. So if you get up there on March 15th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., you might see him March 29th from, I believe those are probably the same hours Don't have the hours here in front of me, but we'll get this for you next week too. So it's the Mike Malamute Auto Museum, private collection, 1121 Lawrence Drive, Newberry Park, California. It's worth it. I'm gonna try and get up there for that.
Is that in the valley, Mark?
And it's a far west valley, Newberry Park, California, way out in the West Valley by past Thousand Oaks, I think. The cars are very interesting. They're like every museum seems to have a theme, and this one is very small cars. Mike Malamute likes collecting them, like BMW. What is it? The Isetta, the Messerschmitt. Which one of those is BMW? Carl, you know these things. You have a name, yes. Carl Brower. You sound very German.
Isetta yes. is the BMW.
There you go.
And the Messerschmitt was its own company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It always makes me think of airplanes, but that's okay.
And don't forget, if you look on the website, you can peek at some of what the cars are. And the pictures are not very good, I might add. But there is a Mazda Cosmo from the 60s.
Yep. Have you ever driven a Mazda Cosmo?
Well, I've sat in one.
I got to drive one because Mazda had one. They had it up at, Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca back when it was called that. Uh-huh. So it's now WeatherTech Raceway. We have to name the sponsors of everything. And I expected great things, and it was a little bit underpowered.
It's a rotary. That's what they do.
We have because the RX-7 and the RX-8, they had plenty of power. I mean, yeah, you had to wind it out to 82 million RPM.
It's the torque thing.
Okay.
The rotaries don't have good torque, and you have to get them up on their tippy toes to get any power. Yeah. Third gear.
It's all right.
At least.
Second gear. Hold on tight. All right.
Yes.
bring us back down to Lions. Okay. Back down to LA. Lions Automobilia Foundation. I got a tour of that. A wonderful tour. Dar Hawthorne, our good buddy, who has done just about everything. He used to have a show on KPFK in, I think, from 1969 to 74 or something, where he played like for 3 hours on Saturday night. He played music. And he showed me one of his a poster from those days of him, and all the letters were all drawn out, all like balloon letters like they used to do back then. And he gave me a tour. He's a drag racing expert and enthusiast, and he's down there as one of the docents, the Lions Automobilia Foundation Museum is having an indoor swap meet March 15th from 8 to 2. Buyer passes are available online or at the door, include both admission to the museum and the swap meet. You can get engine parts, driveline parts, body panels, wheels, transmissions, and more, and coffee and donuts too. We got to get donuts into every show, I think, one way or another. It's only $20. Go to lionsautomobilia.org. The address, 2790 East Del Amo Boulevard, Rancho Dominguez, California. Enter on Santa Fe. So it's at the corner of Del Amo Boulevard and Santa Fe, right off of the 710. Easy to find. And it's a great excuse to go in there. I saw the stuff that they were going to sell. A lot of big parts from big American muscle cars. So
I was just going to ask you, what are you going to get there, Mark? So that's what you're going to get. It's just a lot of vintage Americana.
I'm getting the donuts.
Well, that too, which they is also donuts. Vintage Americana.
They had donuts when I went down there for the tour, and I think I ate most of the box. It's my one weakness, like Homer Simpson says. So, all right, back down in Irvine. Michelle, what do we have?
Well, if you want to be part of the tuner community, and imports are us, right? Go to the Gretty Garage Sale down here in Irvine. And that's Saturday the 15th from 9 to 4. The address is 9 Vanderbilt, co-sponsored by Huff, H-U-F. Don't know anything about them, but that's on their poster. They're selling everything for 80% off, according to their promos.
Mm-hmm. Up to 80% off.
Yes.
That's like, I'm going to get up to 10 Pulitzers for this radio show. Doesn't necessarily mean I will get any.
Oh, color you skeptical. Okay. So there's going to be a drift show. They'll have a show too of different, Japanese cars. So you'll probably see some of those RX-7s. And
will you see Dom and Letty?
Oh, I'm sure they'll be there. Yeah, sure.
All right.
And if you want to take a look and get kind of a preview of what Greddy sells, in case you want to go down there, it's greddy.com.
And they specialize, Carl, you know, the Super Street. Tell us what Greddy kind of, what is their specialty?
Their specialty is modifying import tuner cars. It's just bizarre to see their name because, you know, they've been around a long time and it was, they were like one of the hot new kids on the block almost 30 years ago when we started Super Street Magazine in 1996. And Greddy was in there with, you know, DC Sports and Jackson Racing and just all these, like, you know, tuner brands that I remember quite well from the back in the day. Don't forget HKS. You know, I just think about all those guys. But Greddy was just and remains apparently a staple in the import tuner world.
That was what the Fast and Furious, the first one anyway, was based on, was the scene.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And it was so bizarre watching that movie in the theater because I, you know, when I was calling my parents in Denver where I grew up from LA, and it's like, oh, I work at this magazine called Super Street where we cover modified Integras and Civics and Eclipses. People are modifying Civics? Yes, they are modifying Civics.
Yep, it's true. It's all true. And they're still there. They're still in business. There's still kind of a scene. It's not the same deal as when Frank Choi was organizing import drag racing up at LA County Raceway in Palmdale. That's gone. The movie was shot, I think, on the big runways down there in Orange County. Was that El Toro? Is that where it was shot?
Yep.
Yes.
So it's not quite like that. It's not quite like the movie, but it's still fun. And you can get some parts for your project car, Project Civic.
Yeah.
And if that's not your scene, Michelle, where else can people go down in the OC?
You can go over by the airport at the Lion Air Museum. And now this is different from the other Lion Automobilia Foundation Museum that Mark mentioned that's up in the South Bay area of LA. This is basically a warehouse on the tarmac at the Orange County Airport, John Wayne Airport. And what they're going to do on June 15th from 10 o'clock on is have a Carroll Shelby tribute. It's their sixth annual. So, you go to the museum, which is on the tarmac, drive out there, and it's just, it's awesome. They've had Porsche events there too that I've gone to. And so all the cars are out in front. They have some aircraft in the museum. So you get a mix of the cars and the aircraft, and it's just a really nice environment. And so there you go. Bring your Shelbys, and that's on June 15th. At 10 a.m., the address is 19300 Ike Jones Road in Santa Ana. If you'd like to show your car at that event, go to lionairmuseum.org to register.
L-Y-O-N. That's right. That is a big
difference. You ain't lying.
And that is such a really cool collection of airplanes. They have a B-17, a B-26, a couple, I can't remember all of them, but like there was the things like a Neptune, an F-7, just these really cool airplanes that were in World War II. And of course, the founder of the museum, General William Lyon, was, I think he was a general in the Air Force. And I believe he flew in World War II and quite a guy. And then he developed all these housing tracks in Orange County and all over the place. And he was a car enthusiast and has a wonderful car collection there in addition to the airplanes. It's worth seeing. If you haven't seen it, it's worth the drive down there.
Yes.
It's definitely surprising. You're like at this airport or next to an airport, and all of a sudden it's like, what is going on here? There's this museum that's full of all these fabulous machines flying and driving.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah. And it's run by some wonderful people, and the docents are so helpful. They'll talk your ear off if you like.
All right. And so what is that? What's the date on that again? That's March 15th.
Oh yeah. March 15th.
Okay, good. We're set. And one other thing down in the OC, Overland Expo, SoCal. Overland Expo is this celebration of off-road, what we used to call camping, It's now turned into this whole subset of things that include much more than just camping, you know, exploration, big rigs just set up with big tires and roof racks and campers that extend from the roof, and just everything you need to be comfortable out in the wilderness is going to be at the Overland Expo SoCal, March 15th and 16th, Saturday 9 to 5, Sunday 9 to 4. This is going to be at the Orange County Fair and Event Center in Costa Mesa. Prices were $20 a day, but I think if you bought early, I think from this point on, they might cost a little bit more than that, but it's money well spent, because it's this whole subset of sort of travelers who, all these guys who are doing these van life videos, you know, here I am in Baja and I brought my surfboard and life is beautiful. And you can probably meet a lot of those guys there too. Go to overlandexpo.com, March 15th and 16th, Overland Expo SoCal. Don't miss it. Be lots of fun. And one more thing. We're already over time for the calendar. NHRA Pomona, March 27th through 30th, Pomona Fairplex. Start searching around for a gas mask now so you can survive those nitro fuel fumes that'll otherwise get you.
Oh, come on. You love it. Don't you want the nitro burn?
I have been there. I used to cover the NHRA semi-regularly, and you get downwind when they're in the pits and they're running the engine, and it's just this veil of yellow, toxic fumes, and people try to last as long as they can. You can see the tears streaming down their face and other stuff, and eventually everybody just runs and tries to get to a place with the clean air. So anyway, enough of that. We're looking forward to that. There's John Force is still a player there. He's going to be one of the days. He's got a special John Force autograph session there. A lot going on. We'll talk about that more in coming weeks, because it's a little ways off. But now it's time for the news. We're only a minute and 46 seconds late starting the news section, but there's so much going on here, and we are glad we have Carl here who can make sense of it all. I just sent a thing off at autoweek.com about all the cars that are made in Canada, Mexico, and China and sold here in the US. There are tons of them, and it represents just billions and billions of dollars. And we are all being battered around here. Like, Monday of the previous week was when the tariffs took effect. Tuesday, the tariffs were lifted, and they said they would be lifted for a month. It changes all the time. So this is the best information we have as of right now, but it could change. Carl, tell us what it all means.
It means nobody knows what the heck's going on is the first thing it means. But I'm going to pretend I do. No, first of all, when you said all the cars made in China and Mexico and Canada, I want to make sure everyone knows. All the cars aren't made in China, Mexico, and Canada, but they probably soon will be. But right now, Mark's got a really nice list of the cars that are made in those countries, and all of them would be potentially subject to a massive tariff that would, people are saying, almost shut down the auto industry. That whether it's, you can't be profitable as an automaker producing the cars under those circumstances, or you can't sell the cars at the prices you'd have to charge to remain profitable as an automaker. There's people saying that, you know, the industry would shut down in 10 days and people would be getting laid off and plants would
except for the cars made in the US, right?
Right. So isn't that what we want, guys? Only the US made cars, and people who are in the US making them are allowed to survive. That's the idea.
I saw a thing that in, I think it was Automotive News, that said the auto worker UAW was happy with this.
Yeah, for some reason they liked it.
What? But the other question is, how do you even decide what is an American made car?
On the window sticker, it shows you the percentage, right?
Yeah, so and none of them are 100%.
The transmission and the percentage
right.
of parts and the final assembly. So it's on
your Monroney. And they'll do those lists where it's like the most American made cars. And I think it's almost always either like the Mustang or the Ford F-150, you know, that yeah. that where the highest percentage of the vehicle, both its assembly and its parts and all, are sourced out of the U.S.
The Mustang GTD final assembly in Canada.
Right. So even that one's a foreigner. Yeah. That's even a foreigner one. So it's really a tricky thing, like Michelle is saying, to try to define an American car. I mean, it's been decades that they've been making Camrys and Accords and Civics and stuff in this country, you know? So it's like, do you really want to claim that those aren't American cars when American hands have been assembling them for decades? But, I mean, I think what you stated at the beginning was the most important thing, Mark, which is this is clearly kind of, I think the word's kabuki, right? The kabuki dance in Japan. There's a lot of that going on right now on the international stage and global stage across our leadership as well as other leaderships. And we'll see how long any of these things remain stable. It's really tough though for car companies, because car companies, I always feel like you have to remind people, they're not on a 2 week or 2 month or 2 year cycle. They're on like a 4 to 7 year cycle. If you decide today that all the cars that don't come from the US are going to be much more expensive, an automaker can decide they're going to make the cars here. That day, they're not going to start making them here and selling the cars that are made here for probably 4 years, 3 or 4 years. Just, you got to redo everything. You got to redo plants. You got to redo supply chains, the whole thing. So when you have this level of kind of schizophrenia going on at the top level of any country, if there's an auto industry within that country, it plays havoc with them. They just don't know how to plan for anything. And tariffs is just one part of it. You know, we could go down a lot of things like EV mandates and those kind of things too, right? Where it's just like, right. Okay, we've got our 4 to 7 year product plan laid out. Oh, is that what you think, says the leaders of the country? Well, let's just make sure you understand that we've decided next week we're doing this, this, and this. So.
Yeah, it'll drive you nuts if you let it. But just this list that I came up with, everything from the Chevrolet, Silverado, these are made in Mexico. Silverado, Ford Maverick, Ford Bronco Sport, Ford Mustang Mach-E, Audi Q5, BMW 2 Series, 3 Series, Chevy Equinox, GMC Terrain, Ram 1500 and 2500. Some of those are made in multiple locations, but that's just Mexico. You go up to Canada and it's the Honda CR-V, Toyota RAV4. Of course, RAV4 is made all over the place too, including Georgetown, Kentucky, but also in Woodstock and Cambridge, Canada, Lexus NX, Lexus RX, Chrysler Pacifica and Voyager, however many of those are left, that Dodge Charger Daytona, Chevrolet Silverado. And like I said, the final assembly of the Mustang GTD is in Canada. These are a lot of cars. It can't be dismissed.
And a 30-day reprieve on the tariffs isn't going to help if we're on a 4 to 7 year continuum with our automakers here.
Does our man in charge know that?
It doesn't sound like it, because he met with the big three and they voiced their concerns, and the most he would give them was 30 days.
I think the 30 days is to change the tariff policy, hopefully, not to change where they're building Silverados. But it's just hard to try to predict how this is all going to turn out, not just in 30 days, but in like the next 30 hours. So we'll see how things go. I think maybe in a few months, this won't be under the spotlight of the current administration. They'll be on to other things, and we'll hopefully have a little more of a concrete roadmap of what's going to be going on in terms of regulations for the auto industry. But I think the next couple months, I expect to see electric vehicle mandates and incentives rolling, you know, vanishing too. And
well, EV, we're going to get to the EV stuff in a minute, but right now, do you think that this 25% tariff and 20% on Chinese cars and parts, do you think that that is going to be lifted, you guys, or do you think it's going to, are we looking at this tariff as a permanent thing?
It's honestly hard for me, Mark, to see this as something that actually lands and remains for any length of time. I just think the downsides. I understand what Trump's trying to do. He's trying to, you know, play hardball with these guys so that they'll do equal tariffs. And you can certainly make an argument that for decades, we've been paying much bigger tariffs on stuff that we export to these countries than they have to pay for stuff they send into ours. So I'd love to see balanced tariffs too. I think what could end up happening is instead of balanced, maybe, you know, we go a little bit higher on them and they go a little bit lower, talking like 2 and 3 percentage points here. And we get some movement in the direction that Trump wants versus this completely equalized thing that he's claiming he wants today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michelle.
I was just going to say also, just to add on to what Carl was mentioning, is that, an you know, give the car manufacturers more than 30 days, give them 3 years on this at least, mm-hmm. because they can't just pivot. They don't work on a 30-day calendar. So
well,
more time.
No industry does, especially the auto industry. But you're right, Michelle. That's the tough part is, like, I don't mind changes. I think it's, you don't want to be unrealistic in how much damage you're going to do to the industry, to any industry, if you make rapid changes with rapid requirements.
The original NAFTA free trade agreement was signed in 1992 and went into place in 1994. It was replaced by Donald Trump with his own USMCA agreement in 2017. The idea was to open up the borders to free trade between Canada, Mexico, and the US the same way that the European Union does it. You know, if you build a car in France, you can sell it in Germany and you don't have to worry about a lot of differences there. But, you know, they signed this and now all of a sudden it's all gone. At least it is as of broadcast time. It seems like so much of this is being done by a guy who has no idea what he's doing. I don't know, man.
Well, he wants to just, like I said, throw a lot of, hand grenades out there and see how much reaction he can get, how quickly.
Yeah, his press secretary said he's willing to listen to those who would like to plead for exemptions. So let's see. That
in our case here in the car and truck world, the 25% tariff could mean as much as $12,000 added to the price of a car, and really even the cheapest cars, it could mean a $4,000 increase in the sticker price that you're paying. And it's not like anybody else is going to pay that. The consumer is going to pay that, which is, it's not like Canada is going to pay, you know, in loonies or something. It's the consumer who's buying the car, or who won't be buying the car.
I heard the manufacturers would just let their profits fall by that much. Isn't that what they do when that happens?
Funny. Yes.
Yeah.
But the other problem with the consumers is they're going to pull back, not just because of, you know, an increase of the sticker price. And I actually heard up to $2,000 per car, but your taxes are going to be higher for your tags, you know, your registration fees, your insurance. It's all keyed to your purchase price. And then of course, what about financing, right? You're financing even more money now. Ugh.
This is all only if you buy one of them damn foreign cars. You know, if you just buy American like you should, you can avoid this problem. What's the problem?
Except that list I read off sounded very American.
I was going to say, you know,
it's a global market. It's a global market. Right. And the sooner we all realize that
from everywhere. And so these parts are going to be in boxes that are coming in and they're all going to be tariffed. Even if it's a hinge, you know, it doesn't mean the engine or something big. It could be a hinge.
Can you imagine driving down the street in a Silverado and someone's going, you had to go for one of them foreign jobs, did you?
Yeah.
I was getting gas when I lived in Detroit. I was getting gas in a BMW and these two kids waiting for a bus there. They saw my car and they said, "What?" And they were actually yelling at all the cars that went by that weren't American. They're foreign car. And they saw me getting gas in the BMW. I said, why aren't you driving an American car? And I said, this was built in South Carolina. And they just kind of like, what?
Yeah, see?
it's a complex world we live in. But the thing is, if they leave these tariffs in place, it's not just loss of production or a dip in sales. These factories that they invested in, because the U.S. government said you can do this in Mexico, where labor is less expensive and you can build a more economically feasible vehicle, those things, those factories are there now. And they were designed at a time when the government was saying, yeah, you can do this. And now the government.
Yeah. And free trade will flow through all of North America. Right. And
that was the idea.
So this wasn't.
So what we've learned here, folks, is never trust the government. All right. We've made some progress in tonight's show.
All right. Well, speaking of not trusting the government, well, we're going to move on to our next topic. Federal support for electric vehicle adoption seems to be eroding further away. Michelle looked up a couple things to share with us.
I wanted to know what was going on in Congress, not just in the Oval Office, which is the executive branch. I wanted to know what the lawmakers were doing, because what happens is the executive branch issues a dog whistle, or like we talked about, you know, throw something out there to see what will happen. And then the only way laws get made is if Congress steps up. So Congress is trying to go with what the president is leading them to, which is away from EVs and keep using ICEs. So here we go. We've got Senate Bill 541. And this was introduced by a senator named Barrasso from Wyoming. And his Barrasso bill is called Eliminating Lavish Incentives to Electric Vehicles Act, aka the Elite Act. So you know where this is going, right?
It's because, them Hollywood elites and their fancy EVs.
Yes, that ordinary people can never afford. I guess they never saw the Chevys and the Nissan Leafs. I guess those aren't affordable. Anywho, so moving along, this bill is written to completely repeal the EV tax credits and charging station building tax credits, which they used to fund. So, and these things were been in place for 10 years now, but they were built to encourage people to buy EVs and to build the infrastructure. So this is something that Trump will probably sign. And so it's going through the Senate right now. And guess who supports this legislation? American fuel and petrochemical manufacturers.
I am shocked. I am shocked. So big oil supports getting rid of electric cars.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And I found a quote from the president and CEO of the American fuel and petrochemical manufacturers, Chet Thompson. He says the EV tax credit was always supposed to sunset. Oh, really? Fantastic. So Senator Barrasso is absolutely right to say enough is enough for taxpayers. After more than a decade of subsidies worth billions of dollars, it's time for EVs to compete on a level playing field. So there you go.
There you go. How much of Senator Barrasso's income comes from the oil industry? I'm just wondering. I'm just asking that question. Does any of it?
Yeah, sure. So then we also have another bill from another Republican senator from Nebraska. And they don't drill in Nebraska, right? Okay. She has introduced, this is Deb Fisher, the Fair Sharing of Highways and Roads for Electric Vehicles Act, called the Fair Share Act. It aims to have these EV owners contribute funds to the Highway Trust Fund. Now, EV owners have never had to do this before by paying taxes to support the federal highways and keep them, you know, maintained, I guess. I'm not sure if they build, but I suppose they do, but they mostly maintain. So now, according to the Fair Share Act, they'd have to pay a one-time $1,000 tax on their EV purchases. So this will add to the cost of an EV.
That doesn't seem unreasonable, because internal combustion cars pay a gas tax every time they buy gas. And that theoretically that money goes to support and maintain highways. I don't think it's too unreasonable. I don't know if $1,000 tax, I think saying, making it this way is just a way to limit the sales of EVs, but because you're slapping a grand on top of the sticker price already with this tax, I think there's got to be a better way. Maybe incorporate it with your annual registration so that it's not $1,000, it's maybe $100 or whatever works out. I think that might be better, but this is not, in theory, a terrible thing. Maybe.
I don't know. Well, I like your thinking, Mark, and could they do it like the gas tax works, like either with your electric bill? I don't know. I guess it's hard to tell for home chargers how much of that electricity is going for your car versus something else. So maybe registration is the best, but certainly on mobile or on public chargers and charging networks, the supercharger network and all that stuff, they could basically just be like, oh, you know, because those cars, like everything, just like everyone knows exactly what phone we're on and what we're doing on it. When you plug into any of these electric vehicle charging stations that are out there, they talk, the charging station talks to the car. It knows exactly what car you're in, which and who owns it in theory. So they could certainly add another, like, okay, here's the kilowatt hour charge for this charging station, and here's the extra 1 to 5 cents per kilowatt hour for the road tax. EVs do weigh more, sometimes substantially more than the equivalent internal combustion vehicle. So they are wearing the road out faster, purely from that reason alone, than an internal combustion vehicle is. So I like you're saying, Mark, it doesn't seem unreasonable to say, how come you guys are, who are probably the most wear heavy on the roads, are getting away with not having to pay any taxes to maintain the roads, which is the current situation.
Yeah. Well, the biggest wear heavy is the big rig diesels. As anybody who drives along in the slow lane knows, that concrete and asphalt is beat up pretty badly because that's where the trucks have to drive. But yeah. Okay. So we're all sort of semi in agreement in this. So good.
Well, just how to do it, because
yeah, you got to fine tune.
The problem with, if you tried to get people to pay this extra money when they register their EVs every year, is we register through our state. There's no federal involved. And so how do you get a federal tap into this? Well, you probably should do it through their tax returns and maybe have them declare that they have an EV, and then they have to pay a little tax every year when they do their returns to the Fed.
There has to be a fair way to do it. I have two electric cars, which I recharge in my driveway using solar panels on the roof of my house. You know, so how would they get that? I don't know. We'll figure this out.
You're cheating all over the place. You're getting free energy. You're getting free tax, no taxes. What's going on here?
And just wait till you hear about the free press cars I get. Speaking of which, we're on to our reviews section here, folks. And I want to follow up on last week's reviews with just two notes. The Hyundai Ioniq 5, I was complaining about how it comes with a NACS charger, which is the Tesla standard to charge in and plug. And I was complaining because you can't easily plug into all Tesla chargers. I failed to mention that all of those Ioniq 5s come with a converter, a NACS to CCS converter. So you can charge at CCS outlets, which are most everything that's not a Tesla supercharger station. And one other thing, we were talking about the Jetta SEL that I drove with the automatic. And I had this in my notes and I just didn't get to it. I was so emotional about the Jetta. The shifter comes with a manual mode. You just bang the shifter over to the right and then you move it up and down and you can manually shift. There are no paddles on that. So having said that, we're going to go to our expert, Carl Brower. And Carl, let's try and get both of these cars that we want to talk about. So Get yours, your first one in quickly, and then we'll move on to the big, exciting supercar that Carl and I both saw. First, though, Fast and Furious type car.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I had a 2025 brand new, quote unquote, Lexus IS 500. But as anyone who knows about this model knows, that car was last redesigned in 2014. So it is now over a decade old. It's 12 official model years old. And that is an eternity in the car world. So clearly my first complaint is that this car is old and it totally needs a redesign. Wait, I'm rethinking this. It's actually one of the reasons I like the car so much, because, you know, I'm in that stage of my life now where I want cars that can, you know, drive without tires on uphill on snow both ways. So this car doesn't have any hybrid componentry in it. which makes it lighter than almost everything it competes with, which would be a Mercedes C-Class or a BMW 3 Series or an Audi A4, A5 type car. It weighs less than those cars. It has hydraulic assisted steering. Most every car today now has electric assist. And for the non-engineer types like me, the best explanation is you've got a coder who has to try to decide how much steering resistance you should be feeling as you turn the wheel, because there's not actually like a natural force of resistance coming from the electric motor that's doing it like a hydraulic assisted steering uses. So you don't have as good a steering feel. The cars weigh more. And they cost more. This car's pricing, it starts at just over $41,000, which is much less than you're going to get for any base C-Class or 3 Series or A4 or A5. And even the most expensive version, the V8 naturally aspirated, another very unique thing in today's world, a naturally aspirated V8 in the IS500 that I was driving, makes 400 and I believe it's 72 horsepower and 395 pound-feet of torque. Sounds fabulous, has this great broad torque band, and does all these things and has all these characteristics that no modern entry luxury car has. So I'm a huge fan, even though it's old.
Now that is the classic recipe for a muscle car. You take the biggest engine that you have and you put it in the smallest, lightest car. This is a 5-liter V8 that they dropped into an IS, which I think started out as an IS 250, if I recall, way back, yep, however many years ago the IS was launched. And that was, yep, a really fun car. It was lightweight, it was tossable, it was responsive, it was tons of fun. But this one, they've taken that engine out and they dropped in this big 5-liter V8 into this lightweight car. Does it feel too heavy, Carl?
No, and that's the thing is you know, you would expect the front end to feel all heavy and it to feel kind of you know, squirrely around corners and all the back end sliding around. The suspension dialed in to manage the weight up front, and it sounds great. It feels great. And then it's still really luxurious. I mean, you got heated and cooled seats. You got a heated steering wheel. You know, they had that touchpad control in all the Toyotas and Lexuses for years, and it wasn't a very good execution. And they still have it because they're not going to invest the money to redo the
center. Did it drive you insane?
Well, no, because they now have a touchscreen right at the top of the dash, right below the windshield, right where you want it, so you don't have to look away from the road too much. And the touchscreen controls, I forgot the touchpad was even there. I never even looked at it because I was able to use the touchscreen to do everything. So it's down there if you want to play with it, but you don't have to utilize it at all. So the car really was quite appealing. I knew it was kind of cool before I got it, but by the time I was done driving it around and reviewing it, I was like, I kind of want one of these.
Really? Well, maybe you'll get one. Add it to your fleet. Carl has an excellent collection of cars, ladies and gentlemen. It's too long. It's like his resume. It's too long to list here. But okay, thank you for that, Carl. I'm going to see if they have one in the press fleet, maybe. And
you should get it. You should get it, Mark. You would enjoy it.
And another car that we have. Yes, Michelle.
And the yellow. Talk about that yellow.
Yeah, flare yellow. I had the limited production one that's got this appearance package that gives you flare yellow exterior paint, plus black wheels. And I think there's yellow stitching inside the cabin and all. And it's cool. And then it has a great Mark Levinson audio system and a sunroof. It's hard to fault the car. And that's
screaming yellow Zonker yellow.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And the police won't chase you or anything.
You know? Nah, no one will notice you.
They won't notice you.
A car that you will get noticed in, and that Carl and I both got to go and see at no less a location than Jay Leno's garage was Carl and I saw this, the McLaren W1. What did you think, Carl?
You know, sort of like that IS500. I kind of want one of these, but this one's going to be a little harder for me to make work because they're only going to make 399 and they're all already sold. And even if they weren't, I'd have to write a check for around, well, they start at 2.1 million. And I think when you get into all the options that you want to do, probably 2.3, 2.5. So unlike Jay, who's got one on order and will be getting his, I don't think I will be getting a W1, maybe on the used market in a long time from now, if some of my stocks do some things that I would love them to do. But it's a really fabulous car, Mark. I mean, the guy who was the head engineer for it gave us like a 45-minute presentation. And
he was good. I liked him.
He was great. Enthusiastic. Marcus Waite. Yeah, Marcus Waite. Yeah. And it wasn't just that he knew what he was talking about, but like he's the guy, it's like his kid, you know, he's like so passionate about describing
Yeah, and that's what he said at one. He said at one point, I don't know how many of you have children, but this is like my child. He really loved it. Yeah.
But the numbers are numbers are crazy, Mark. 1,258 horsepower, 988 pound-feet of torque, 3,200 pound curb weight, 217 mile an hour top speed. I mean, this thing is going to slaughter. Like, I would love to know, and I hopefully someone will run it, like, through the Nürburgring and certainly quarter mile and 0-60. Well, I want to know what this thing does.
The interesting thing is that all that horsepower, 1,258 horsepower, goes to the rear wheels only. This is not an all-wheel drive thing. It's, I mean, that saves weight, but boy, getting that much power down, that's got to be a problem. And yet they are able to get 0-60 in 2.7 seconds.
Yeah. OMG. And don't forget the 2,200 pounds of downforce that it's got when you get to higher speeds. I think it's like over 130 or 140 miles an hour. It weighs 3,200 pounds. So that means it's, you know, 1,000 pounds short of having as much downforce as when the car is just sitting on the ground with its own weight, because it's 2,200 pounds of downforce. So that's awesome.
And one thing I will say, it looks better than, because the obvious competitor for this is the Ferrari F80, which matches it almost a stat for stat. It has almost the same horsepower, almost the same top speed and everything else like that. But I think that this McLaren, usually McLarens, you know, they have the all-out performance, but the Ferrari looks better, or the Lamborghini looks better, or the Maserati looks better. But I think this one really does look, it has the looks to, you know, its exterior writes no checks the performance can't cash. Or that's a terrible analogy.
Oh,
it's a cliche. And back at CarCraft, they would have red penciled that out of anything you
yes
wrote,
they right? would have yeah Chuck yeah. Shifsky would have X'd that out, but it's really a fabulous looking car. It's got such cool like features. The rear wing does all sorts of crazy stuff depending on what mode it's in and how fast you're going, and the doors open, you know, of course, gullwing style like the old 300 SL. It's really
cool. Anhedral is what they said. They didn't make it. It wasn't Falcon. It wasn't Gull. It was anhedral doors. So it looks good in just from any way you look at it. And 4.0 liter twin turbo V8 hybrid. Now, this is an interesting thing, you know, to add by, you can do so much with an internal combustion engine, but you just add this relatively thin disc of an electric motor. It's like a pancake shaped electric motor that fits between the internal combustion engine and the transmission. And you have, that's how you get up to 1,258 horsepower. The internal combustion engine makes, I think, 900 and something horsepower. And then the boost up to that is from the electric motor. And that makes a lot of sense, I think, when you're trying to achieve these ridiculous numbers, just to add a little bit of electricity. The battery that charges that is only, it's a little bit over 1 kilowatt hour. So it's very small. You can actually run it on just the battery if you're trying to sneak in late at night or sneak out the next morning or something. And it's good for a little bit over a mile, I think. So it's not like a plug-in hybrid or anything, but it's a helpful thing. And
well, the numbers on that alone are crazy. Like you said, Mark, it's a 44 pound radial flux e-motor that makes 342 horsepower. Just by comparison, the McLaren hybrid components in the W1 have been reduced by 88 pounds compared to the P1, their last top end car, the McLaren P1 that a lot of people know about, while making twice the power. So it's twice as powerful of hybrid motor and as the P1, and it weighs 88 pounds less.
It is incredible. I hope, I never drove the P1. I never drove the F1. Did you get to drive any of those, Carl?
Ever? No, I wish. I have not driven any of them, but the F1 is my ultimate dream car. So that's like a dream.
I will step in about that F1. Everybody from Ron Dennis of McLaren to Mr. Bean has crashed an F1. Because it doesn't have the electronic safety things that this car has. So I don't know. I agree. I would love to drive any one of those cars, but I think if I had the opportunity to own any one of them, I would probably go for this one just because it would keep me from killing myself.
Well, I remember I had the 2005 Ford GT. It was the same thing. No traction, no stability. I used to always, you know, point at my head and said, this is the traction control system, point at your head. And if you don't know how to turn it on, you're going to crash. So I like that fact of that car.
That Ford GT, the one that you had, I felt it was so stable. You could hang the tail out. You could move it around.
Oh, sweetheart.
You could do anything. And it was so much fun to drive. It was so safe. You know, it would tell you, okay, now two turns from now, we're going to get a little bit of oversteer. And you'd be like, okay, I got that. And you would handle it. It was no problem. That was such a safe and ridiculously fun car to drive.
Yeah. Mark, a few weeks after I got mine, I lived up in Camarillo at the time, and I had it over in Oxnard on a weekend when in the industrial area where there was nobody around. And I was power sliding it sideways, coming out of corners and stuff. And my brain was kind of exploding at the same time. I was giggling and having all this fun. And there was a part of my brain going, you just bought this thing. You know how much you just paid. And it's a mid-engine car. You know, you used to power slide your muscle cars all the time. Not hard. Big V8 up front. No weight over the rear tires. What the hell are you doing? You know, so it was quite an experience driving that thing around like that. But that was exactly it. That's when I knew. It's like, this car is so cool. It's inspiring me to be an idiot in it because it's telling me so much information. I'm not actually going to hurt myself. And it was really fabulous.
Now that 2005 Ford GT that you had, that was back when you had to apply to own one, right? That was like, I always thought that was maybe a marketing gimmick that you had to actually send them a resume and all these reasons why they should sell one to you. So you had to do all that, right? To get that 2000.
Well, actually, Mark, what was wild is they didn't do that back then. They basically just theoretically let the dealers have them and charge whatever they wanted. But I have all sorts of insider information. I'll let a little out right now, actually, because it's been long enough. But apparently Ford got like 700 plus people from like Sylvester Stallone to like, you know, a Madonna and stuff like that, saying they wanted one of those cars when they were on their way. And they approved 121 people who got essentially this treatment you just said. There were 121 people. I know Sammy Hagar was one of them. I know Jay Leno, of course, was one of them. I think Nicolas Cage was one of them. So there were some people. And then there was some guy who no one's ever heard of. I think his name was Carl Brower or something like that. And he got on that list too to be able to get one.
But so you beat Madonna and Sammy Hagar.
No, Sammy Hagar made it on. Madonna did not, and I knew of a couple. There were some professional football players, they told me, and all. I don't remember their names now and stuff. So, yeah, I got onto the list somehow. But that, and we got to order the car we wanted with the exact options we wanted and everything. So it was pretty amazing. But the car was a fabulous car. So sorry to go down the Ford GT rabbit hole. That's a dangerous one. Don't open that again, or
it's easy to do that. That was one of my favorite cars. I mean, I not to continue talking about it, but it reminded me, we only have 1 minute left on the show here. It reminded me of a really, really nicely engineered Ford Mustang. I don't know. Is that blasphemy?
No, I would always say that the car was like the best muscle car ever built because it was a manual shift. They were all manual shift, no traction, no stability. And it was a V8 engine. And it's like, and it sounded and drove like this kind of burly vehicle, but it was like the best, most refined and capable and informative, intuitive vehicle you ever drove.
And you can get them used now for pennies on the dollar, not like the W1, which is 2.1 million to start. Okay, we have 30 seconds left here. We want to thank Carl Brower for coming on the show. Carl, it's always a pleasure. You are an automotive expert, great connoisseur, excellent taste, and darn good looking. So thank you for being on, Michelle. Thank you. We want to thank Wendell and Master Control. Everybody, stick around for Rhapsody in Black, great music you didn't know you loved. And we will see you all here next week on The Car Show. Africa,
DJ Namde from Radio Aphrodisia. Join us every Saturday as we nice up your weekend. It's all about music from Africa and the African world. Radio Aphrodisia, 4 to 6 p.m. It's Champeta Criolla from the coast of Caribbean, Soca Calypso, Juju Music, Musica Afro Cubana, Cha Cha Cha, Afrobeat Highlife. It's all in the mix. Radio Aphrodisia, Saturdays, 4 to 6 p.m. Showtime. Tune in! Yeah, you're totally just true.
As the go-to media outlet for Southern California progressive thinkers since 1959, KPFK is very proud of its legacy. But maintaining that legacy can be expensive. Become part of the KPFK community today by donating at kpfk.org. Just click on the Support KPFK button on the website to send your gift today. Because while ignorance can be costly, speaking truth to power is priceless.
KPFK, your